The next case today is American Institute for Foreign Study Incorporated et al. Versus Laura Fernandez Jimenez, appeal number 20-1641 and appeal number 20-1692. Attorney Rosenberg, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your argument.
Yes, good morning. Nick Rosenberg for the appellant and cross appellee, Ms. Fernandez Jimenez. May it please the court, if I may, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes.
Thank you. Au Pair in America required its au pairs to agree to waive their rights to bring any claims, including class claims, quote, in any forum other than arbitration conducted by the American Arbitration Association. Ms. Fernandez Jimenez agreed to that waiver. The Supreme Court has been clear in Stolt-Nielsen, in Lamps Plus, in AT&T Mobility, all cited in our briefs. The primary purpose of the Federal Arbitration Act and the application of the Federal Arbitration Act is to give effect to the terms, agreements, and expectations of the parties. Where the parties are silent on arbitrability of class claims, a court is not to imply or infer any consent to class arbitration. But here, the parties were not silent. The terms chosen clearly recognize class claims are waived other than in arbitration. It couldn't be more clear what the parties intended. The intent of the parties is that the class claims would only be brought in arbitration. And the expectations of the parties are clear that Ms. Fernandez Jimenez was waiving her rights to bring claims other than in arbitration, meaning not waiving the right to bring those class claims in arbitration. In, as I said, in a number of cases, the Supreme Court has been clear on the point that the FAA is to be interpreted to give express give effect to the express intent and language of the parties. In AT&T Mobility, cited in our brief, the court said arbitration is a matter of contract, and the FAA requires courts to honor the parties' expectations. Here, there's simply no ambiguity. The parties were not silent. Au Pair in America contemplated class claims. They used that language in the form agreement and insisted that those class claims not be brought other than in arbitration.
Well, could you stay with the precise language of the agreement some, Mr. Rosenberg? And let me try this out on you. It seems that when they sat down and signed the agreement, your client arguably had a right to bring or serve as a class member in a lawsuit, but your client a priori had no right to arbitrate as a class. That's what the Supreme Court has told us. There isn't such a right absent an agreement. So given that, you could see why you had only one thing that could be waived, and that's the right to be a class member in a litigation. There was nothing to waive as far as arbitration. So I don't see why we would draw an inference that when you waive the one thing that you have, that somehow creates something that you didn't have, which seems to be the logic of your argument.
I think I follow the question, Judge Okea, but I want to be clear that Lamps
Five
Plus,
minutes remaining.
Lamps Plus is clear that it says, if you just say all claims are to be brought in arbitration, the typical arbitration clause, and you don't expressly contemplate class arbitration, we're not going to impose on a defendant the burdens of class arbitration. What the Supreme Court says, we want to see some evidence of consent.
That it says it's been contemplated. It says it's got to be unambiguous, right?
Correct.
Absent an unambiguous agreement, there's no right to class arbitration.
Absolutely.
So where is the unambiguous agreement to arbitrate a class action? All I see is an unambiguous waiver of a right to be in court. At least that's what the language that you point us to seems to say.
So, and this is the line we talk about, the line that the judge and the district court brought. But if we read that fourth sentence of the agreement, and I think, if I may, actually, I think it's worth going through the agreement. I think it's valuable. In the appendix at page 129 is a good cut. There are several copies of it throughout the briefing and exhibits, but Appendix 129 I'm looking at, there are four sentences in this agreement. First sentence, this agreement shall be governed by the laws of the state of Connecticut. I don't think that's at issue. The second sentence, I agree that any dispute with or claim against AIFS, its staff, agents, and et cetera, including those arising under this agreement or my participation in the program, which is not settled informally, will be exclusively resolved by binding arbitration to be conducted in substantial accordance with the commercial arbitration rules of the American Arbitration Association. So now that's the kind of language that Last Plus says, that if you say all claims have to go to arbitration, that's not enough. And we concede that. But that's where the judge drew the line. But we have to read on. The third sentence, the location of the arbitration and identity of the arbitrators will be decided by mutual agreements with the costs borne by the parties. So that's again, I don't think that's at issue. And then the last section, which the district court called the waiver section. By accepting the terms of this agreement, I agree that the Federal Arbitration Act governs the interpretation and enforcement of this agreement, and that I, OPAIR in America, and AIFS are each waiving the right to judicial or administrative agency resolution of disputes, any right to trial by jury, and lastly, as I put in, and lastly, quote, as well as the right to bring and resolve claims either in an individual capacity or as a member of any class action by any means and in any forum other than arbitration conducted by the American Arbitration Association. So our point is,
your client clearly didn't waive. It's very clear your client did not waive whatever right they had to arbitrate a class action. That's clear. But that begs the question, did they have such a right? And what do you point to say they had such a right?
Because all of the jurisprudence from the Supreme Court on this point, if it's well settled in the circuits, is it's not that you start with the presumption that it's precluded. You start with the presumption that the parties are free to contract as to what they will arbitrate. And here they said all claims go to arbitration, and then they clarified what they're waiving. You're waiving the right to bring it in trial or an administrative agency and class actions except in arbitration. So even if we acknowledge that, even if we take the court's sort of assignment of this section to be a, quote, waiver provision, that's fine. It still doesn't change the fact that what she is agreeing to waive on its face is the right to bring class claims other than in arbitration.
And Mr. Rosenberg, I think the question bears further examination, as Judge Kayada has been suggesting to you. It's pretty clear that it's not just the general intent to arbitrate all claims that gives you a right to arbitrate class claims. So let's just knock that underpinning out of your argument. The Supreme Court, because of what they believe to be significant differences between arbitration of class claims and litigation of class claims, has imposed special requirements. And it says there has to be a specific agreement set forth in the arbitration agreement that is clear and unambiguous, and the burden is on your client. Now, you have asserted that it is unambiguous, but the trial judge disagreed with you, and Judge Kayada's questions suggest that what is unambiguous is the waiver of your right to litigate class claims, but the agreement itself is not without some difficulty as being read as clearly giving you a right to arbitrate class claims. All right, so if there's the least ambiguity, then we have to affirm. Those are our instructions from the Supreme Court. So can you please hone in on that.
Yes, thank you, Judge. And to Judge Kaya, too, I apologize if I misdirected my comments regarding this question. I want to address one of your points, Judge Lynch, first, which is the notion that the agreement to arbitrate all claims. We don't argue that that phrase in the second sentence gives us a right to class arbitration. I agree.
But you specifically mentioned it as you were attempting to respond. So let's knock that out. What else do you have?
Correct. But just to put a finer point on it, that Lamps Plus says that when you say all claims, that's not enough. It's not preclusive, but it's not enough. So I go to the last sentence, which is this waiver provision, as the judge called it.
It's expired.
And to your point about how is it not ambiguous, and again, the plain language is that my client is waived any right to bring and resolve claims either in an individual capacity or as a member of a class action by any means in any form other than arbitration. So the point is the inclusion of other than arbitration makes it unambiguous.
We have it. Thank you. You've reserved some time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Rosenberg. Please mute your camera and your audio. Thank you. And Attorney Tucker, please introduce yourself on the record to proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Robert Tucker, appearing on behalf of appellees and cross-appellants. May it please the court. Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez makes one argument on appeal. I will first address her argument that the district court abused its discretion in finding that the party's arbitration agreement does not unambiguously provide for class and collective arbitration.
The standard is not abuse of discretion. We're interpreting a contract. That is a matter of law for us. So let's just put that aside. I suspect your argument is the same regardless.
Correct, Your Honor. I would just add that it's my understanding that in reviewing a granting or denial of a preliminary injunction motion, that standard is abuse of discretion.
Yes, but it turns on likelihood of success. So go ahead with your argument, please.
Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez has not sustained and cannot sustain her burden to prove that the agreement unambiguously provides for class and collective arbitration. Consistent with the holding in Lamps Plus, the district court correctly held that Au Pair in America, or APIA, may not be compelled to submit to class or collective arbitration of Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez's claims because their agreement, known as the Terms and Conditions Agreement, does not unambiguously provide for class and collective arbitration. Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez contends that an out-of-context reference to, quote, class action in the party's agreement demonstrates that the parties unambiguously agreed to class and collective arbitration. This argument is a red herring designed to distract the court from the conspicuous and critical absence of the terms class arbitration and collective arbitration from the party's agreement.
Well, I don't think they're trying to distract us there. Just take them on their face. They're saying that because she expressly waived class litigation outside of arbitration, that's a sufficiently clear inference that she must have not waived it for arbitration. And so what do you think of that on the merits?
Understood, Your Honor. I think that amounts to silence, which under Stolt-Nielsen would say that is insufficient to find a contractual, unambiguous basis for class and collective arbitration. And as Your Honor noted earlier, that phrase, the class action, appears in what the district court termed the waiver clause, and only explains what claims have been waived. The term class action does not appear in the clause that defines the scope, form, and method of arbitration, which the district court termed the substantial accordance clause. And there's otherwise no language in that clause that even arguably provides for class and collective arbitration, much less unambiguously provides for it.
You know, Your client drafted this. It drafted the waiver clause. It could have been a little clearer that, you know, this is a waiver clause, even though we maybe you can read it by implication to say, oh, you do have the right to arbitrate class claims. We're not trying to hide the ball from you. Instead, your client didn't do that. And then to an au pair who maybe not that conversant with American idiom, they might reasonably have thought that that meant, okay, we're giving up litigation, but we still have the right in arbitration. And then you put in language that suggests that any disputes about what the agreement means should go to the arbitrator. Now, they've given up the claim that the issue should have gone to the arbitrator. They've expressly stipulated it's an issue of law. And it may very well be that under LAMPS Plus, this is not sufficient to show a absolutely crystal clear agreement to arbitrate. But your client might want to think about the language that it uses, especially given the industry that you're in.
Understood, Your Honor, and that point well taken. I would just
5 minutes just, remaining.
Yeah, just a couple of notes, Your Honor. The first is I would just say that the APIA's intent here was not to deceive or mislead, and that there's no evidence in the record below before the district court about their intent on that provision. And I understand your point generally about clarity in the agreement, and that's again well taken. But I just want to point out that in LAMPS Plus, the Supreme Court addressed the question of, you know, does the fact that the party who drafted it, you know, can you construe the ambiguity against the drafter? And the Supreme Court clearly said the answer to that question is no. That questions of ambiguity will not be.
That may be, but my point was really different. You're in litigation because of language you chose. You want to avoid litigation, maybe some greater clarity would be in order.
Understood, Your Honor. With my remaining time, unless the judges have any other questions, I'd like to focus on the cross appeal at this time. Where the district court declined to issue an order enjoining Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez from proceeding with any class or collective arbitration against William Gertz, an employee of APIA.
Mr. Tucker, I understood that there was a stipulation by Mr. Gertz in the settlement of the Middlesex state court action that he would be bound by the outcome of a arbitration that was merely a bilateral arbitration and not a class arbitration. So if in fact there is an affirmance of the essential thrust of the district court that there's sufficient ambiguity here, and therefore it's resolving the question, no, you can't have class arbitration. Why is the Gertz issue in front of us?
Well, Your Honor, excellent question, and I would say, and I think what Your Honor is getting at is the question of whether this is a moot issue.
Yeah.
We would argue, Your Honor, that it is not, because unlike an order from this court, the agreement between Mr. Gertz and Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez is not self-enforcing. It's possible Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez will not honor the agreement or argue that it's unenforceable. So an order from this court granting the appeal would
resolve... Have you ever asked them?
Asked them, Your Honor?
Yeah. You know, are you going to go after Mr. Gertz even if you lose this appeal?
We have not, Your Honor, just because we haven't gotten that far. You know, there's always a right of any party to a contract or an agreement to argue that the agreement is unenforceable.
You know, courts are reluctant to make law that we don't have to. If they turn around and do that, which would surprise me given the costs of litigation, you've got a perfectly good defense that, you know, you've got an agreement here.
Understood, Your Honor.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Tucker?
No, I would just, going back to the argument on Mr. Gertz, if I could just quickly summarize. It's undisputed that at the time this issue was before the district court, that Mr. Gertz had not, under any circumstances, agreed to arbitrate on a class or collective basis with Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez. Despite that lack of agreement, Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez had commenced the class and collective arbitration against both APIA and Mr. Gertz. And so Mr. Gertz was entitled from the injunction because, as well established and as Mr. Rosenberg mentioned earlier, arbitration is a matter of contract and consent, and there was an absence of that entirely with respect to Mr. Gertz.
Okay.
And this is a thank you, Your
thank
Honor.
Thank you.
Mr. Tucker, please mute your audio and video at this time. And Attorney Rosenberg, please reintroduce yourself on the record to begin.
Thank you. Nick Rosenberg again for the appellant and cross-appellee, Ms. Fernandez-Jimenez.
Mr. Rosenberg, if you lose this appeal, given the stipulation entered in the Middlesex court, are you prepared to make a representation one way or the other about whether the Gertz issue is now would be mooted?
Well, yes. I mean, the agreement between the parties was we brought arbitration. Mr. Gertz asserted that he had never signed the arbitration agreement and wasn't bound.
We know all of that. So, would you answer the question?
Yes, I want to make sure I answer the question you're asking. The agreement was that if the court were to reverse the district court so that Ms. Fernandez could
bring assume that the court affirms the district court.
Then we would proceed. Judge, I mean to cut off.
Is the Gertz issue moot, or is it a live issue?
It's moot in the sense that we would do what the agreement says, which we would proceed bilaterally in arbitration, or if he claims that he's not susceptible to arbitration, we'd proceed in court. I think he's reserving the right to assert that he's a third-party beneficiary of that arbitration agreement, so can compel bilateral arbitration, if that's the case.
I thought the Middlesex stipulation was not subject to conditions like that. Have I misunderstood it?
I think the agreement, I apologize, I don't have it in front of me. I think the agreement was that if you were to reverse, we'd all arbitrate against both parties as a class, and if not, the arbitration is bilateral as to both parties. And we would stand by whatever agreement was made.
Okay, now, what is it you intended to say to us?
Sorry, Judge. Thank you. And I hope I clarify that. I apologize that I don't have that agreement in front of me. But we have no intention of arguing that the agreements are unenforceable or otherwise that we're not going to follow them. I just want to go back to, and I know we talked about this, but I just want to clarify, if I can, and attempt one more time that we're not arguing that. There was a suggestion that we're arguing that the waiver of class claims, or the waiver of class claims outside of arbitration, somehow implies that there's a consent to arbitrate class claims in arbitration. Our argument is not that there's an inference because they were waived outside and therefore they must be permitted inside. It's a much more simple, if I may, argument, which is that the parties said what they're waiving, and what they're waiving is the claims, those class claims other than in arbitration. And again, we look to contract law, and a contract is ambiguous if it's susceptible to two plausible meanings. And here, to have an agreement and to meet the expectation of Ms. Fernandez, who signed this agreement, which is the guiding principle, what the parties expected, she signed an agreement that said she would waive her claims, her class claims, other than in arbitration. That cannot be read in a way to say that it's not. And to require nothing in LAMPS, that's my final point, judges, is nothing in LAMPS Plus or other Supreme Court precedent requires the parties to explicitly say, she has the right to bring these in arbitration. It says she waives them outside and she doesn't waive them within arbitration. So again, it doesn't
require that. Thank you, Mr. Rosenberg. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes argument in this case. Attorney Rosenberg and Attorney Tucker, you should disconnect from the hearing at this time.